Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. Today is Friday, May the 16th, and today we're going to be talking about deadbeat dads. Asim Taylor owes about $100,000 in child support, and an appeals court in Ohio has upheld an unusual sentence meant to make sure that the bill doesn't grow. Justices reaffirmed that the Elyria man can't have any more kids until he pays up on his child support. Joining me today to debate this topic is Sarah Miller. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Austin. How are you?
Doing well. Ian Hewitt, welcome back to the show as well.
Good to be here.
All the Libertarian Republic crew is here today to discuss this topic. So we're going to be talking about this deadbeat dad. Taylor, he's in his mid-30s. He's fathered four children, and he could go to jail if he impregnates another woman during the 5 years he's on probation. Now, the judge has said you can either go to jail or you can pay the $100,000 that he owes in child support. What do you think about this case, Ian?
Well, his response is, I have a constitutional right to procreate, and he's absolutely correct. He has control over his own body. Mm-hmm. If he enters into a consensual agreement with another person, they have control over their own bodies. There's absolutely no reason for the government to tell him that he can't procreate.
Right, because what if he meets a woman, what if he meets a sugar mama, and she, he likes her, and she likes him, and maybe she's his way out, and she wants to get pregnant. She wants to get pregnant right now. She wants to have that baby. So, like, shouldn't he have the right to do so if he wanted to?
I don't know. I think it's a very...
Bring it on, Sarah. What do you got?
I guess I think it's like a pretty murky area because mm-hmm. I see both sides, and it's rare that I agree that government should have any type of say in this personal area of your life. Mm-hmm. But as a libertarian, I also believe that other people's rights should not be violated because your right is being put forward.
Whose rights are being violated?
So if every time he's procreating, the mother that's having the child, the mother that's having the child is applying for government assistance because she can't afford the child and he is in pain, somebody else's energy and work and effort is paying for that child.
Right, so here's
now, it's hypothetically possible that the mother is not on government assistance, but is just receiving child support from him, though. Mm-hmm. Regardless, even if the mother was on government assistance, it would be the mother requesting government assistance and not the father.
Right, so here's the thing. So what the appeals court didn't address was that the fact that there was there apparently was a court order in 2013 that said it didn't have the necessary information. So one of the three judges wrote a separate opinion that backed up the reasoning, saying, whereas here, the defendant has demonstrated a long-term refusal to support multiple children by multiple women, notwithstanding his ability to work and contribute something for their care, an anti-procreation condition is reasonably related to future criminality. Having children is considered a criminal act?
Right, they're saying, well, it's not a crime to have lots of kids, but we think that it might be related to crime, so we're going to criminalize it as well. Can you criminalize anything that's related to criminality? That's absurd.
But you were talking about liberty, you're talking about choices and being a libertarian, Sarah. Don't you think that this interferes with his right to happiness? We have a right to happiness, don't we?
Yeah, but I just believe that my view on government assistance is stronger than my view on his right to procreate.
But here's the thing. The state is saying you can't do this because you're not paying up because the state is having to pay for these children, right? That is, the issue is that because he's not paying child support, the state is having to step in and pay for all these children. Well, the problem is the state thinks that it has a responsibility to take care of the children in the first place.
The problem is the state being the parent in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really just reflect on how absurd it is that their argument is, we're stopping this because it's related to criminality. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can show that drinking alcohol is related to criminality and you're less likely to be a criminal if you don't drink, should mm-hmm. we therefore criminalize alcohol? And so right. on. You can't just criminalize everything that, while not being a crime in and of itself, is somehow associated with crime.
Sarah, do you think that men should be required to pay child support?
I believe that a child is something that is created by two people. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that there is equal responsibility in the conception of the child and in the taking care of the child. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that a man should have any more responsibility than a woman, especially because now women have the capacity to earn more money mm-hmm. and to, you know, have an independent life. So
when it comes to child support, you'd say there needs to be an equal burden placed on both sexes.
Equal legal responsibility. Yeah. Like, you can't just starve your kid.
Okay, so then right? here's another question. Here's a follow-up question for you, Sarah. Are you pro-life or are you pro-choice?
Pro-choice.
Okay, so then should the man have equal say in whether or not that woman gets to have a child? Why are you pro-choice?
I'm pro-choice. I'm almost radically pro-choice. Mm-hmm. I have pretty extreme views when a woman's...
But you just said that men and women have an equal... If men and women have equal responsibility for taking care of a child, why do men and women not have an equal say in whether or not to have the child?
Because a woman's life in some situations may be at risk.
So it's her body, her choice, but it's not her responsibility.
No, it absolutely... I'm saying right now as it stands, I'm saying it's more of the man's responsibility, right? Like, if there's a divorce and there's child support involved, like... I'm actually saying I believe a woman should take more responsibility than they currently have, as far as.
But it sounds like you're saying that men should be required to pay child support equally, but that you don't believe men should have an equal decision and when it comes to the right of the life of the child.
I don't know. It, for me, in the beginning, I guess it would have to, you know, to assume that they're two rational individuals mm-hmm. Coming to a decision if they're discussing to whether to have the child or not. It would have to be something that was, you know, decided on prior to mm-hmm. the decision whether to have an abortion or to move forward with the pregnancy.
Now, you said radically pro-choice, so I assume you would support abortion in more circumstances than just cases where the mother's life is at risk. So then the problem there mathematically is you have either side can stop the child from being conceived, hypothetically, but then once conception has happened, the woman has 100% veto power on whether or not they then have the child. So they don't have an equal say in whether they have the child, and the man is legally obligated to provide child support after it's born.
Is that what you think, Sarah?
Well, I mean, in any situation, I will say, I'm not, this is not from a religious background, but I do believe that in an ideal world, people would be reproducing in such a manner where they're in a committed relationship and they have made this decision as a team together.
Sure, but where I see the flaw in your philosophy here, Sarah, is you're saying that men should have to bear the burden equally, but they don't have equal choice when it comes to the simple decision of whether or not the child should live or not. And it seems that that's really what the double standard is in today's society, is that men are called deadbeat dads and required to pay child support, or they go to jail if they have any more kids, but they don't have any say when it comes to whether or not that child should survive.
Well, let me say, as far as earning capacity goes, and I mean, I'm a woman, so I kind of know what my body goes through mm-hmm. as far as I'm built to reproduce. Mm-hmm. And as a man, you will never understand mm-hmm. Psychologically and physically what it's like to be a woman, right? So I think...
And vice versa.
Oh, of course. And I'm not saying that I believe men are smarter or they should make more money or something like that, but I do know that having children takes an absolute physical toll on the female body. Mm-hmm. This is well known.
Yeah.
And I believe in some cases, women in their third trimester sometimes are not even allowed to work for the risk
right.
of hurting the child. There's bed rest or, right. you know, she has to cut back. And a man still has the ability to go out and earn and right. to be productive when a woman does not
but
have
But having a child, well, you say women does not have a choice, but that's not true. Doesn't a woman have a choice to have the child?
Well, I half agree with Sarah there. I do think men should be providers, and mm-hmm. that's a more fulfilling role, but I don't want to force men into that role. I want to persuade them that that's the best thing to do. Mm-hmm. If you force men to be providers when they don't want to, I think you're really incentivizing divorce and incentivizing single parenthood, both of which are empirically unfavorable for kids.
Yeah. No, I want to follow up with a question for you, Ian. Do you believe that men should be required to pay child support?
Well, it depends what you mean by that. I certainly don't support the current child support system, and I have the same objections as you. If two parents simply starved their child, I would say that's criminally negligent.
Right.
They have agreed to care for this kid by bringing it into the world.
So, okay, well, that's obviously, we're talking about, like, absolute negligence here. But what I'm asking you is, do you think that the state should be involved in demanding that men pay a certain fixed amount of payments a month to a woman with whom he's been legally known to father a child?
No, I would say the solution here is that the government should stop subsidizing whoever these adults are that are having these kids, and should also stop making the man pay child support.
I think so, too. The reason why I don't think men should be required to pay child support is mostly hinges on my my stance on the way that government treats men when it comes to the act of abortion, which I'm very pro-life. And I'm not pro-life because I'm religious. I'm pro-life because I think we need to encourage a culture of life. And the problem is that there's a double standard where the government is saying, you have no choice in whether or not that child should live or die, but we will subsidize you. You as a man through the taxpayer system will subsidize abortions and birth control options for women. So they have the choice to pay. So if they want to have the abortion, I'm already being taxed so that they can have an abortion through, you know, our money going to organizations such as Planned Parenthood and sex education and things like that. And so the double standard is that I have no choice in whether or not the child lives or dies. Only if the mother chooses to have the child will I then have, no choice but to pay child support. And I think that the state should not be paying child support, because if the state doesn't pay child support and the state doesn't demand that men pay child support, maybe women will stop having sex with these idiots and they will stop reproducing. I'm not talking about like eugenics, I'm talking about voluntary eugenics here, where women who are single will stop popping out children because they get a benefit for every child that they have. What do you say to that, Sarah?
I mean,
don't you think people should be able to should be forced to bear the burdens for this? Because here's the thing, the man has no choice. Once the child has been impregnated in the woman, the man has no choice from then on. But according to your philosophy, the woman has total veto power. So then why should men bear any of the responsibility responsibility forward?
Well, if I can jump in here, I would say, what is eugenic is the government telling this man how many kids he can have.
Absolutely. And if you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, eugenic policies have been going on in the United States since, I think actually there was a sterilization case that came up recently in California. This is from the Huffington Post at the end of last year, the recent revelation that 148 female prisoners in two California institutions were sterilized between 2006 and 2010 is another example of the state's long history of reproductive injustice and the ongoing legacy of eugenics. The abuse took place in violation of state and federal laws and with startling disregard for patient autonomy and established protocols of informed consent. In 1909, California passed the country's third sterilization law, authorizing reproductive surgeries of patients committed to state institutions for the, quote, feeble-minded and, quote, insane that were deemed suffering from a, quote, mental disease which may have been inherited and is likely to be transmitted to descendants.
Now, someone might say to me, you know, look, Ian, I agree with you in principle that the family and the community and the church should fulfill these functions and not the government. But the fact is the government has taken on these functions, and so we can't just have the government stop doing it. There would be some short-term harm. The longer the government, though, does this stuff, and the more we have the government do of it, the less prepared and able the family and the community and the church will be able to do these things. So we're making the problem worse the longer we wait. It's not sustainable, what we're doing presently.
Here, what do you think, Ian, as Sarah writes down her next point, what do you think that the reaction to the public would be if the court had demanded that a woman stop procreating, that a woman stop having babies? What would you say to that?
Right, absolutely. There would have been a huge double standard.
There would have been a backlash like you had never seen. We would have all had some different wristbands we all would have had to wear for a month to protest it, you know, with the most effeminate color that has ever been seen. You know, Sarah,
we would have recognized that was an intrusion upon someone's right to procreate.
Absolutely, because I think women's rights and procreation are much more recognized. What are you saying, Sarah? Come on. You got
so I have two points. One is, I have to ask this because it's ridiculous and I thought of it. What do you believe, like, if you're in jail and they say, we'll take 5 years off your sentence if you let us sterilize you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that because that's a choice, that that's okay?
That's a good question. I'd have to think about it before I could give you a definitive answer on that. It's kind of the spur of the moment thing. This is a life-changing decision. I think that for sterilization, what, for, like, pedophiles or something like that?
No, just in general. Like, I don't know if they're doing a study.
Sterilization, or something like that. No, I don't think that the government should be in the business of sterilizing people in such a way, no.
Okay.
Okay, why? You're really, in that instance,
I just wanted to...
You're coercing the person into being sterilized.
Yeah, because it's basically. You are coercing them. It's
of course, but they still have a choice.
Well, they still have a choice, absolutely. They actually do stuff like that for pedophiles, where they have... There's a great documentary by Louis Theroux from the BBC called A Place for Pedophiles, and they look at this prison in California for pedophiles, and one of the pedophiles actually was deemed rehabilitated because he first took chemical castration, and then he said he finally wanted a full physical castration. And his case was actually deemed, he was given more leniency and for being released because he opted for the castration of himself. And so... the state actually does make these kinds of options available to the public. It looks like California is one of the most heinous when it comes to eugenics. Eugenics program. Listen to this: from 1907 to 1937, California sterilized 60,000 people. And even though it was scaled back, the law in the 1950s, the law was not repealed until 1970.
Wait, but is that including, like, women who get hysterectomies for health reasons and things?
No, it's talking about mandatory sterilization for people who are deemed, insane or who may breed children that are deemed, idiots. So we're talking about people, and here's the thing, they didn't just do it, hey, you're going to get sterilized today. Like, these women would have children, and then they would be sterilized in the hospital.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's really terrifying, the history of eugenics in the United States. And I think this is absolutely a form of eugenics, what this judge is doing, by demanding that the man have no more children. You're violating his basic right to a pursuit of happiness, which I think is absolutely ludicrous. And it's got to go to the Superior Court in Ohio before it gets on its feet. So I think that there's definitely going to be some litigation.
The government
this.
Is trying to fix some of the problems caused by government with more government.
Absolutely, yeah.
What about some type of incentives for people who don't reproduce?
Mm-hmm.
If who there's like a tax break or something, almost like a reward for good behavior rather than rewarding someone for bad behavior.
Why are we doing that? Why would we want to incentivize? Who's going to pay for the incentive? A tax break, I guess, is one thing, but I mean... What's laughing? You're
incentivize
laughing.
Incentivize people not to reproduce? I mean, I assume it's your plan is a bit more specific.
I guess
not just try to extinguish the human race.
Just throw that out there,
the,
Sarah.
The idea came to me because when I mentioned this earlier before we started recording, that when I was in college, my campus used to give out the 72-hour pill, Plan B, at no cost to female students.
Mm-hmm.
You would go there, you would have to wait in line and just go to the health clinic. Then eventually they started charging, I believe it was $30 for the item. Mm-hmm. I mean, now the plan B is in a vending machine on some of campuses in Pennsylvania.
Really?
That's actually true, yes.
That's interesting.
I mean, let me clarify. I'm not going to turn down a tax break, but then I'm also going to want the same tax break for parents who do have kids.
That's true. But the whole thing is that they started paying, and I remember I was working for the paper at the time, so I said, why did you start charging for this service that mm-hmm. you used to provide for free?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I don't know if this is true, but the nurse I interviewed at the time said to me it was because male students were complaining that they weren't being offered a parallel service at no cost.
Oh, so the men were complaining that because they weren't getting a certain, like, they weren't getting, like, free condoms or something
like
that.
Yeah, they weren't getting free anything, so this was unfair to them.
That's interesting.
But my point is that it's not unfair to them because if they...
Go ahead, keep going.
If they are going to have to have this decision... for a lifetime, right, for having a child,
mm-hmm.
and they, let's assume they both decided for her to go get this pill, that it's helping both parties, right?
Right, exactly. Ian, what do you say?
Well, let me just return to an earlier point I made, because I think this is relevant here. If you look at Putnam's bowling alone data, decades ago, a lot more Americans used to be in mutual aid societies, mm-hmm. where people would pay dues, and then when a member was in need... you would receive money and assistance from that society. And as welfare spending has increased in the last several decades, membership in those groups has declined.
Interesting.
So what that means is, over time, those groups are less and less able to take care of people. The longer we wait to scale back government welfare, the more it will hurt, actually, when it's not sustainable anymore and we can't keep subsidizing people via the government. So while it's true that there will be some short-term harm when we scale back welfare, as the role of the church and the family are returned to those institutions, the longer we wait, the worse that short-term harm is going to be.
Interesting. Go ahead, Sarah.
It really reminds me, and for someone who doesn't, if someone's listening that doesn't really follow politics, a really great parallel to this at a very simple level is weight loss, right? Mm-hmm. So you do a diet, or you take diet pills, or you do something drastic like eat no carbohydrates, you get an immediate result, right? You lose weight, the problem is eventually or temporarily at bay. But then the longer you wait to have like the equal op, sorry, I'm
she's tongue tied.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Keep going.
You get a backlash, is what I'm trying to say. Eventually, it no longer works, and your body is not responding
to... Like drug addiction, mm-hmm. right? Like when people say, hey, we can't cut this program because there'll be short-term harm, that's like saying to a drug addict, like, hey, you should keep doing this drug because if you withdraw from it, you'll feel bad for a while.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So just keep doing it indefinitely.
All right.
And maybe it'll work out.
All right. I want to switch topics. So this is Friday. We was a little bit loose on the rules. Sarah's here today. We don't often get a third guest here. And I'd like to take advantage of her because we were actually having a debate about another...
I bet you would like to take advantage of me.
I would like to take advantage of Sarah, while I have her here, to talk about a topic that we were talking about right before the show that was very contentious amongst the three of us and almost came to blows. No pun intended. But it was. This is for you guys who are big fans of the Freedom Report podcast. If you're listening to this entire show already and you're still here, then I'm assuming you're going to be interested in hearing our points of view on this next topic. This is a story that comes out of Delray Beach, Florida. Parents are in an ongoing legal battle over a three-year-old South Florida boy's circumcision. A court fight continues for a three-year-old boy whose father is demanding him to be circumcised, but his mother does not. At issue is a custody agreement they both signed, both of them, which stipulated their son Chase would be circumcised under arrangements by the father, Dennis Nevis. Nevis and the boy's mother, Heather Hieronymus, never got married. So they basically never got married. They had the kid, but they had an agreement that he would be circumcised. The mother is now backing away from this because she's changed her mind about circumcision, saying it's not medically necessary and it could be risky with general anesthesia. Oh, yo, Sarah. Three years old to have a little boy have his tip cut off. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's terrible. I've been passionate about this topic for as long as I can remember.
She's passionate about penises.
I'm passionate because I genuinely... think it's horrific, mm-hmm. and I do believe that this is something that is constantly getting new information and new studies are being developed on it. And in the period of time where she signed that agreement until today, mm-hmm. if there has been advances in information mm-hmm. regarding the topic, that she could be allowed mm-hmm. to change her mind.
Yeah. And my question is Ian, how can parents sign away a legal right to a child for whose body they do not own? Can I sign away, if I was your parent, can I sign away your right to a pinky toe because, we both decided we're going to cut off your pinky toe?
Well, you can sign away a right to my wisdom teeth. Yeah. As far as this particular case goes, I don't know the contractual intricacies involved. It'll mm-hmm. have to go before an arbitrator who knows more than me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of complexities in between these two parents and what exactly they agreed to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think that male circumcision is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I don't have the data in front of me because I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I can post it in the podcast description, and there is a lot of good research showing that circumcision reduces your risk for all sorts of different conditions, urinary tract infections, penile cancer,
mm-hmm.
and bacterial infections.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I think that, in my opinion, circumcision is going to be one of those things that in like 2,000 years,
yeah.
they're going to look back and be like, what the hell were these people thinking? I'm going to compare it to bloodletting.
Well, right.
In like the right. medieval days where they thought if they cut people and let them bleed out for an hour, like once a week, that they were curing
blood
diseases.
Bloodletting didn't reduce your risk of anything.
Well,
circumcision reduces your risk of all sorts of stuff.
So do condoms.
Yeah, but they thought it was going to cure.
The real issue here is the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases, namely HIV, which is where it really centers. Right now, you talk about urinary tract infections.
Right, unrelated to STDs and also cancer.
It's unrelated to STDs. However, you can reduce your risk of getting a urinary tract infection by cleaning yourself. We live in a first world nation.
Or not having sex with a lot of different people.
Not having sex with a lot of different people. It's like here's the thing. If you realize,
well, therefore we shouldn't do anything to reduce our risk of getting some infection because we can just treat it with antibiotics later.
What if we found out by cutting off our ears you reduce your risk of ear infection? You know, like that. Like there's all kinds of medical procedures that you could theoretically undergo. But the difference is that you have consent. If you wish to remove your own ears, Ian, do it. But don't say that you have the right to remove someone else's body.
Sorts of decisions for yourself when you're an infant.
Well, that's right, which is why the parents should not have the right to take make that decision for them. And here's the thing. You used the wisdom teeth example for example earlier, but the reason why that example is not congruent here is because wisdom teeth come in when you are at the age of consent. They don't come in when you're a child.
Or if having wisdom, your appendix removed. All of us would agree parents should make for an infant that infants can't make
infants
for themselves.
Infants don't get
their ears pierced. I'm kidding.
Well, children come to a certain age and they usually would want their ears pierced. But again, getting your ear, I think it is wrong that parents get their children's ears pierced before they have the right to choose what they want to do with it. That's wrong. What do you think, Ian? You think the parents should be able to get their...
I mean, the intactivist philosophical arguments just don't make any sense. Like, we would agree that toddlers can't...
You're not a libertarian, Ian!
...can't consent to surgery... But of course, parents should be able to make those decisions.
We're talking about cosmetic decisions here.
I have a point. So you said that they can't consent to surgery, so parents should make that decision for them. Well, then that means that parents should be able to choose not to have surgery. What if a kid has a tumor and they believe that their holistic remedies can cure the child?
Yes, well, all the creepy whackazoids who say they don't want to cure
them. Then it should be the same rights for them,
you
correct?
You have agreed to take care of your child by bringing them into the world, which is part of the reason I think that parents should get their son circumcised.
But you believe that people should have a choice, right? You should be able to choose if you could get your child circumcised or not.
The reason I think you should be able to choose is because parents know better than a toddler how to make healthy decisions for that toddler.
But here's the thing, Ian, wait.
If you're making unhealthy decisions, you're harming your child.
There
I think
are
you
parents
violated
that leave their kids on the roof of a car and drive away.
To take care of that kid.
Say it again. Here,
there was a story recently where a woman left the kid on the top of the roof of her car and drove for a mile before she realized.
Right.
That would be criminal.
Like,
I don't
you think
I could
she
be
could
any
decide
clearer
things
on this.
Like,
no, I clearly do not think that. I think that you have violated an agreement to take care of a kid you've chosen to bring into the world if you starved them or hurt them in some way.
Well, doesn't circumcision hurt?
Well, circumcision helps.
Does it hurt though?
But doesn't it hurt? It's like come
I
on.
I don't remember getting circumcised.
Well, it's not about remembering. It's about inflicting pain on a living human being. It's about and this is a 3-year-old child we're talking about here in this situation.
It hurt a lot more if I'd waited till much later.
Well, you wouldn't wait until later. You know how many men go and get circumcised when they're adults? Like. Zero.
Yeah, because they're
zero.
Terrified.
Yeah, you're damn right. They're terrified.
There's a reason they're terrified.
There's a reason they're terrified. You know, you don't cut the tip of your penis off. You know, like we don't do it to women, and it's an outrage that people say, "Oh, we do it to women, female genital mutilation."
It's listen, not the same.
I guarantee you,
it increases your risk of a urinary tract infection.
I guarantee you, there's
women.
A Muslim doctor
it
out there.
Decreases it
listen,
for men.
I guarantee you, there are Muslim doctors in the Middle East who will come out and provide research to you. Totally biased that they will say there is a reason why we do female genital mutilation. It's for the health reasons.
It
it's
is
for the girls.
It is a clear. Let me just finish this one point. Okay. I'll let you talk. Okay. It is a clear medical consensus. Okay. Tons of research. I promise I will link some stuff in the podcast description.
You better
reduces your risk of things if you're male. It doesn't do any of that if you're female. It's only harmful.
How many
it
Muslim doctors will say that it does?
I'm not.
Can
I don't
can
care
I bring
what
up
the doctors
that,
say. I have good.
Can I bring up that everything the Nazi doctors did was legal and moral?
Okay. Oh God.
Like, but
you
I'm
just
saying,
brought in Godwin's law.
But I'm saying, like, that's if you believe something is legal and moral because you've been taught that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's true.
Oh, it took me 2 seconds from Uganda. In defense of female circumcision, panel presents 7 facts. Ooh.
I'm pretty sure there's no research showing that torturing people to death is helpful.
Ian, you're going to love this. Medical research has found a high percentage of women who have had genital surgery have rich sexual lives, including desire, arousal, orgasm, and satisfaction, and their frequency of sexual activity is not reduced. Reproductive health and medical complications linked to female genital surgery happen infrequently. Listen to this. Those who value female genital surgery view it as aesthetic enhancement, not mutilation. They say that about boys, too. In almost all societies where female genital surgery is performed, male genital surgery also takes place. Broadly speaking, then, such societies are not singling out females as targets. the link between patriarchy and female genital surgery is unfounded. Almost no patriarchal societies adhere to the practice, and at the same time, the practice is not customary in the world's most sexually restrictive societies. Women manage and control female genital surgery in Africa, and the practice should not be blamed on men or patriarchy. An influential World Health study about the deadly consequences, quote, of female genital surgery is a subject of criticism that has not been adequately publicized. The reported evidence does not support sensational media claims about female genital surgery as a cause of perinatal and maternal mortality during birth. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a case for female genital mutilation right there.
What am I supposed to disagree with?
What you're supposed to disagree with is that you can find anything anybody would say if it supported their ideology or their religious beliefs, then that it would say that it backs my right to cut off the genitals of my child.
My argument was never that male circumcision is good simply because some people think it's a good idea. My argument was that it's good because it is empirically a good idea.
I do not agree with you that it is empirically a good idea because there are better ways that you can do it without chopping off the body part, without chopping a medically necessary body part. Here's the thing. You act as if a foreskin
is... What do you mean medically necessary?
Well, excuse me, not medically necessary, but what's the word? Sexually necessary, I guess. There's physically necessary. Here's the thing.
I'm pretty sure it's not sexually necessary.
The foreskin actually does provide lubrication during sex.
Can I bring up a valid point?
Go ahead.
I mean, I think I'm the only person here that's had experience with both types of
genitals.
Situations. So I think I'm, if anyone's the authority on the topic here, it's me.
Right.
But I think it's, when you have, unless one of you guys have a medical degree, I don't know about, but when you have experience with both, I think it makes it perfectly apparent that the natural state is the way things were meant to be.
Absolutely.
What I would like to see is a large scale study of men who were uncircumcised and then became circumcised about their experiences. Uh-huh. You haven't seen things from the point of view of those men. As you mentioned earlier, you have not been a man.
Yeah.
So I think what we're interested in here is how does it affect male experience? And you need to figure that out. You need someone who was uncircumcised and then became circumcised.
And I want you to address this point because I think this is important. Man was made in God's image, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Is God circumcised?
People have health problems. We live in a lawful world with disease
Is God intact? Do you believe God is intact?
We live in a fallen world.
Is God intact in your opinion? Man is made in God's image. Is God intact?
God is not a finite biological organism.
So we're not
made in
His
God's
image.
We can reason. That's what we're made in God's image.
Okay, but are we made?
God is not a human being.
So what does it mean that we are made in God's image? I thought God was Jesus circumcised?
We have the ability to reason.
Was Jesus circumcised?
I don't know.
Okay. But do you think that Jesus would have been circumcised at that time, right?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Absolutely, he would have been circumcised. So the thing is that it's, to me, Sarah, I think that the problem lies... I think that it began with religion, and it's become an issue nowadays of we just do it because we don't know why. And you know, one of the things we haven't
it's like the
Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, we do it just because our generation's going through the motions.
Or in courtrooms
it's a bad idea because it's traditional is no less fallacious than saying it must be a good idea.
We're not saying that it's a bad idea if it's traditional. We're saying that it's going on because it's
lots of things become traditions because they're beneficial.
Do you know why it became a tradition in the United States? It's because they wanted to stop little boys from masturbating. The guy who started Kellogg's Corn Flakes,
I would agree with that.
Yeah, they do that because
tell them my nail theory. I think it's relevant.
Well, no, go ahead.
A guy who was an advocate of circumcision said that was a good reason to stop circumcision. That doesn't mean that's why everyone gets circumcised.
Yeah, but you know that a bunch a bunch of creepazoid Victorian era people who were saying every sexual transmitted disease was caused by masturbation. These are the people who wanted to cut off the tips of little boys' penises because they thought it would curb masturbation, which it doesn't. You know, as everybody who's an adult.
But I mean, I think we could make a point that how much sensitivity it would take away.
There are nerve endings.
I mentioned it. Like if you rip your nail off and you touch where your nail used to be, how sensitive and almost, you know, painful, you wouldn't even be able to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
But after a week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks of the nail being gone, mm-hmm. The skin becomes calloused mm-hmm. over and hard.
Right.
And I think that's the best analogy I could think of for...
You talked about empirical evidence. There is empirical evidence mm-hmm. that there are thousands of nerve endings in the foreskin and that also the foreskin is important in creating lubrication for the sexual act. So what you're saying, Ian, is that the... benefits of removing the foreskin from losing the bacteria outweigh the loss of sexual function? Is that what you're arguing?
Well, to respond to the point you made a minute ago, you know, you could find me someone that thinks penicillin is a good thing because it'll make you fly, and that doesn't mean penicillin's not a good thing, even though they're wrong. Mm-hmm. You would need to convince me that the benefits of not being circumcised have the preponderance here. Mm-hmm. You would have to show me a study of men who were uncircumcised and then became circumcised and talked about their experiences.
No,
a large scale study.
No, and you know why? Because people are not people can't be reduced down to studies, Ian. The thing is that the child never had a choice whether or not to sacrifice sexual pleasure for less bacteria. Wait, you didn't listen. You didn't let me finish my point, Ian, because you're not considering it.
Okay.
You're saying you would have to show me a study, but the problem is that you don't get to show. Even if I could show you a study, or even if you could show me a study, could you show that study to an infant and say, "Hey, child, you get to make the decision here. Do you want increased sexual pleasure, or do you want to have less urinary tract infections?" But you guess what? You don't. The child can't have that choice.
The child isn't qualified. The parent is
quite. Wait, can we talk about the point? I mean, I've dated men that were 33, 34, whatever, and not circumcised, and they never had an infection. They never had a urinary tract infection.
I know. We live in the United States.
It's crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. Listen, if you're living in a third world country, which is where most of these statistics for circumcision are coming from.
Where, like, there's no Dial soap every day in hot water.
Exactly. Then you would have a case from an empirical standpoint. But again, it still comes down to me as a matter of consent.
I didn't know we were going to talk about this. I have the data. It's true in first world countries as well.
It's from it's not true in first world countries, Ian.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how the male circumcision and not getting circumcised is any different from the female organ now as far as cleanliness level goes.
Yeah, well, we could talk about that. I mean, I just brought up the point from all of these Muslim activists in Africa that are arguing about genital surgery for females. They say that there are plenty of reasons to do it. Listen to this. It should be acknowledged that female genital surgery is not unique to African women. The authors liken it to genital piercings on college campuses and vaginal rejuvenations requested by some Western women.
The fact that some people have bad arguments for a position doesn't mean there aren't good arguments for a position.
So you're telling me that, and I'm saying this from my perspective, let's say I got 2 urinary tract infections a year, and the doctor said, we could cut off the skin that's above your clitoris, and you'll get 2 less urinary tract infections.
They would be dumb doctors because that would increase your risk.
Okay,
of
but I'm saying if this were true, because basically you're saying that
it decreases. That is an absurd hypothetical.
Okay, so what if
no,
it was
it's
true?
Not. Ian,
what if it was
true?
True?
If it were true, consider this.
But so if they said that to me, but it's going to reduce your sexual pleasure by 25%, I wouldn't do it.
Well, we know it's going to reduce your sexual pleasure.
But if we could say the same thing for the man's end.
If you could, I don't think you can though.
But Ian, yes, you can, Ian. You do lose nerve endings on this. There is a
right. That's
loss.
True.
Having less penis means it's less sensitive. You have less nerve endings to come into contact with another sexual member. So the thing is, Ian, is like you and I were circumcised, so we don't know what it's like. You know, like wouldn't you like to have known? Like you would have a choice. That's the problem. Again, it comes down to the issue of the child not having the choice.
Giving more freedoms by letting them choose.
All right.
I'll give you the last word.
If I hadn't been circumcised and then I contracted any of the number of diseases you're more likely to contract when you're not circumcised, then I would have wished my parents made that decision for me when I was an infant. I'm glad that they did because I wasn't qualified to make these decisions when I was an infant.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for our panel today. I really appreciate Sarah Miller coming and joining us the last couple days. Have you guys been liking her writing? Have you been enjoying her point of view on topics? Why don't you send us an email? We'll forward it over to Sarah. I know a lot of you guys liked her photo yesterday, so I know you got some opinions on this. Send us your thoughts. Tell us what you think about the LibertarianRepublic.com by going to the website on the front. It says send us a tip, send us an email. Tell us what you think. We've had a website redesigned in the last month, and we wonder what you think about it. We've also got a new project coming out, which you guys might find exciting, coming very soon. LibertyViral.com, your place to get exciting libertarian viral content. Do us a favor, if you like our podcast, go to Stitcher and download us for an Android. If you're an iTunes or an Apple person, you can go to iTunes and download the Freedom Report podcast. You can get us every single day, your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the LibertarianRepublic.com.